Conversations with Linda. That's what we're going to do this hour right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Linda Moulton Howe is with us. We're going to take your calls. So, Linda, getting back to this incredible hybrid story, it really does echo the research of the late Zechariah Sitchin, doesn't it?
Well, that's what he was definitely working on, was the Mesopotamia Anunnaki, which in this bigger picture, the Anunnaki would have been the first genetic line made by the progenitors, the original ones from Zeta Reticuli 1 and from Sirius B, that had gone to Mars. And the way I understand it is that there was something like a gigantic asteroid impact from something on Mars, and that it literally was a panicked exodus from Mars. And they came to Earth as the planet where they hoped that they could survive, and that the progenitors were already in a weakened state, apparently, on Mars. And by the time they got to Earth, they knew that as a civilization, they were in trouble, and they started working, because these are still very sophisticated. I want you to hang on to the idea that we're talking about an intelligence that can move around, at least in this arm of the Milky Way galaxy. And they could mix and match genes. And the first thing that they did was start making this bloodline that was them, the progenitors, but that we know them historically as Anunnaki, so that the Anunnaki would be the closest to the original progenitors. And then the Anunnaki made the Astro Albus. And that was a tall, pale-skinned, light blue-eyed humanoid. And they simultaneously made a type of gray beings. There had been beings, gray beings on Zeta Reticuli 1. There had been ones that they had taken with them to Sirius, to Mars. So these progenitors have been living with and around a gray type from Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2. So they had something that was extraterrestrial that they made the grays on Earth that, according to Anthony, the colonel understood that in our historic records, the Ijiji, I-G-I-G-I, would have been that gray that was made in parallel with the Astro Albus. But the Astro Albus was to be the stronger, more viable biology, and again, very strict bloodline connection to the progenitors through the Anunnaki, and that the grays were completely, had nothing to do with the progenitors, were not made from anything that had any genetic link to them, but was from something that was truly extraterrestrial, the grays. But the grays were made to do work for the Astro Albus. And apparently, that's where things went awry eventually, that there was a rebellion of some sort on the part of the grays, and that there has been conflict between the talls and these grays for centuries.
All right, to the phones now we go. We go to Tim in Indianapolis, Indiana, to get things going. Hi, Tim. Go ahead.
Hey. Thanks again, Linda. Appreciate the show, George.
Sure thing.
I watched a special the other day. It was the first time I actually saw it, and I know it was a little bit older, but there was a Russian woman who found an infant in the woods, and they had done a DNA sample on it, and it said that the mother was human, and they had no idea who the or what the father was, but it was not of Earth. It was a policeman over in Russia. The daughter had actually taken the remains of the infant and had it tested, and then they never got it back. And then on another note, I just wanted to ask you...
Where did you read this?
I didn't read it. I watched it on... it's called Unexplained Files. And it's a new show I found on TV. And it was definitely a Russian woman. They've re-aired it like 5 times now on TV.
On what channel?
Oh, God.
I think it's on like Discovery or something like that.
History 2, and then right after that is right after it is NASA. I don't know I'm sorry. I can email it to you.
Yeah, find out what the program is and what this story is, some more details, and I'll try to follow up more.
Yeah, not a problem. And then I was going to ask you and make a comment about the pyramids, the Alaskan pyramids, but my thing about the pyramids are we as people, we build things for use. And I can't believe that we would, or ancient people would build pyramids for just storing bodies. And
they never did.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I don't believe that at all. I think there was some kind of functionality to them, and we don't know yet. But
it's becoming much clearer that the pyramids around this planet were built with a very specific strategy, both pyramids above ground, and we're becoming aware with deep ground penetrating radar that there are pyramids underground in many places. I believe the statistic is true now that they have found more pyramids under the ground in Egypt than above. And the hypothesis is that these grids of pyramids above and below the surface of the Earth were used for probably two functions: communication and energy.
Linda, The Unexplained Files is a program that apparently is coming out of the United Kingdom.
Okay.
And it's, you know, a fellow by the name of Bruce Greenwood is involved in that.
Okay, thanks.
And let's go to some more calls. Moses in Tallahassee, Florida. Hi, Moses.
Hi. How you guys doing?
We're fine, sir. Thank you.
Okay. I'm a 20-year listener of Coast to Coast.
Yes,
and from the onset of me being led to Coast to Coast, all of the so-called extraterrestrial these beings from out there always seem to be, I guess, of a Caucasian I'd say race of
grays are not Caucasian. Grays are gray-skinned.
I'm talking about as far as like the Illuminati, the Anunnaki, and the Quetzalcoatl of Mesoamerica.
Right. They were pale-skinned because they were related to the Anunnaki and the creation of the Astro Albus, which were pale-skinned.
Okay, but most of all the cultures and civilizations, again, this old saying, the picture speaks a thousand words and the writing is on the wall. Most information is in the Egyptian or the Nile civilization. And it clearly depicts these beings who had the solar disk over their head would symbolize a luminosity, a being of light. Are these morning stars, and the symbol of the serpent on their third eye, which symbolizes them being raised to the sixth chakra, or one of the highest chakras. They were clearly melanated, so-called Nubian, Negro beings.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to see if there was any balance or any other information of the Negro or the melanated beings as far as different space beings. That's all.
Well,
all right, that's a good question.
Yeah, one thing I can share, this goes way back into the 80s. I asked, when I was working on the HBO special, there was somebody who had a great deal of knowledge about extraterrestrials from the government's perspective, and I said, why do we have 5 skin blood races on this planet? Allegedly yellow, red, white, brown, and black. And this was a very interesting answer that I didn't expect. He said the grays made some of the humans, which is very consistent with this Colonel story. But he said they don't understand who made some of the humans that are on Earth. And that implies that there has been all kinds of genetic manipulation here by more than one type, and not just the Astra Albus that want to keep the bloodline of the progenitors as pure as possible, which would explain all of the material in Lawrence Gardner's several books about the bloodlines and the strict strict reign on bloodlines coming out of the Middle East, the Merovingians to France, and that part of the world that Lawrence Gardner fleshed out. It's the same story, George. It's exactly the same story when you're in that level. But the other races, you could say that there's been a lot of genetic mixing and matching on this planet for reasons unknown, and that currently there are five different categories.
I would think so. You know, originally, you know, Linda, as I was growing up, going to my science classes, I thought, okay, they live in different environments, therefore their skin is different based on the environment they're in. But as I got more and more into the genetic breeding and genetic alterations by extraterrestrials, I realized that, you know what, everybody on this planet, though they're all similar, we were made and altered by different ET races for some specific reason.
Yeah. And so the story is hugely complex, but frankly, I feel a certain kind of lightness and excitement about finally feeling like I am getting closer and closer to what the true history of evolutionary life forms are in this arm of the galaxy. I think Mars has played an important role in the past, and something bad happened there. And now it would all begin to explain this very strange Earth history, and that the next revelations after this, I think, are going to be in much more detail about how all of the evolving primates fit into genetic manipulation by extraterrestrials on Earth trying to save their civilization. And where have we heard those words before? R.A.F. Bentwaters, Jim Peniston, who touched that black glassy craft, dragged his fingers across those raised symbols, activated something in the self-activating craft, gets binary numbers that come down in his head, and in addition, he gets communication that this is a time travel machine, this black glassy triangle, and that it is coming from an extension of us in the future. That was his term, 50,000 years in the future, where what has happened? Something has happened and their DNA isn't working and they are dying out and they have to come back into the past to get genetic material to use as band-aids trying to keep a civilization alive. And in some ways, it is almost comforting to realize that so much of this comes back to what all of us are facing with on planet Earth every day, how to survive, how not only to survive as individuals with families, but now starting with the first half hour and second half hour of Coast this night, that we are on a planet where because of our ignorance in some ways and priorities that are wrong, that we are now on a planet where if we continue the way we are going to end up cutting off our nose to spite our face because we won't be able to survive. Nothing will be able to survive. And all of this, from the Zeta Reticuli 1 story to Sirius B, to Mars and beyond, and now Earth, it's all an issue of the evolution of life and reaching sort of places and plateaus where moving forward and keeping DNA going becomes a struggle.
You had mentioned Lawrence Gardner. I sure miss him. He died in 2010, but what a great historian he was,
Linda. Oh, and one day in England, he lived in this glorious house. His wife was a great cook. I was invited over for lunch, and after lunch, and his wife was very patient and kind with Lawrence and I when we would get talking. Oh, my gosh. And so he took me out to this office where he had stacks of work that he was working on a new book. And we sat down, and I think it was like 1 o'clock, and it was summertime. And, you know, the sun doesn't really set in England until like 9, 10. And we were still going, talking, papers, drawings, everything out in that office of his when the sun was getting ready to go down, and Mrs. Gardner came out and said, well, you too, I think you've had quite a day. So he was an extraordinary mind, and we had great fun that day going through the history of the world through the lens that he was working on.
Next up, Tim is in Racine, Wisconsin. Tim, go for it. Thanks for calling.
How you doing, George and Linda?
Hi, Timmy.
This is a really fascinating show. I was just curious, Linda, you know you're talking about the cattle mutilations.
Right.
You know, we have a lot of ranchers, a lot of farmers out there, and we have a lot of cameras. I mean, you know, you can put them on trees, you know, for, like, game and whatever. Has anybody ever got any pictures? Because that would be even better. Because, you know, you can talk about it. But once you see it, then you can believe it. You know what I mean?
Well,
also, I got one more. With these different aliens, you're saying they want to, like, make the Earth only, like, 500 million people. Is there any other alien races that don't want any part of that would say, no, we're not going to let that happen?
Do we have an ally in this is what you're at?
Yeah, and I'll take my answer off the air, George. And I really love your show, buddy.
Thanks, Tim. Go ahead, Linda. A minute left before the break.
It's a question we all would like to know. Do we have an ally, a Prometheus? Remember, the Greeks are supposed to have definitely been extraterrestrials, not mythology. And Prometheus certainly thought that roly-poly humans should survive. So maybe there is somebody out there that is trying to help us. And on the pictures, my dear friend Jim Mars, the first time we talked about animal mutilations in the 1980s, he had gone to one of the conferences in New Mexico where U.S. Senator Harrison Schmidt was because of all the animal mutilations all over North America. And Jim was shown a 35-millimeter slide that had a blue beam coming down out of the sky on an area where there was a mutilated animal, and it retained itself in for the camera to take images, and they went back to the site and tried it a second day, and the blue beam, whatever it was that had interacted with the animal, was still being picked up on 35-millimeter color film.
We're going to be back in a moment with final questions with Linda on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. On our next program, Dave Schrader is sitting in for me while I go off on assignment for a bit. I'll be back on Labor Day night, by the way. We will have a live program for you. We're going to come back in a moment with Linda Moulton Howe and final conversations with her on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Linda Moulton Howe with us, of course. Linda, let's talk a little bit about your schedule. What are you going to be doing around Thanksgiving?
Well, I think it depends on my daughter's child and what we're all going to do. So it's sort of up in the air around, you know, those kind of things. You want it all to be joyous and healthy, and you don't want to anticipate until she's here and healthy and all of that. So this is going to be a different holiday season with a little baby around. Serena Wright Taylor, who helps us in so many ways at the LAX conference and contact and so forth. She sent me an email today and said that I've been invited to speak at the MUFON Orange County group September 17th, and she's now a member of MUFON Orange County, and she wanted me to just let everybody know, and that I'm going to put up the website for the link there at Earth Files, at the top of my Earth Files page. So that's something I'm going to be doing back in California in only a couple of weeks.
Super. And then we'll go over your holiday schedule in a week or two, so we can work on your appearances for those dates, okay?
All right.
All right, let's go back to the calls, conversations with Linda. Becky is in Houston, Texas, east of the Rockies. Hey, Becky, go ahead.
Hi. Nice to talk to both of you. I was wondering if you know anything about the protein casein. I read an article about probably 7 to 10 years ago, and it was either from a doctor from Baylor or Rice. I can't remember which. But she had studied it because she was trying to figure out what caused rosacea. And she figured out that casein was the protein that caused rosacea, which affected all the tall, blonde, redheaded people over, you know, in England and Wales and Ireland, of course. And my heritage is, so I started doing some other research, and I figured out from another article that I read that Guernsey cows and Jersey cows don't have that protein in their milk.
Huh.
And I was wondering if all the cattle that were mutilated, were there any of them that were Jersey or Guernsey?
Well, you know, that is a very interesting, that's a very interesting question. And I'm just reading my own note from my research file on casein, that it is in a family of phosphoproteins, and these proteins are commonly found in mammalian milk, making up 80% of the proteins in cow milk, and between 20% and 45% of the proteins in human milk. Casein has a wide variety of uses, from being a major component of cheese to use as a food additive to a binder for safety matches. As a food source, casein supplies amino acids, carbohydrates, and the two inorganic elements, calcium and phosphorus. Now, you've just made a very interesting point that I did not know, that there would be two types of cattle that didn't have this. So to go back over and take a look at some of the files, because I have literally hundreds and hundreds of cases and photos, and it might be that this would be the direct insight about why one farm would have a mutilation of a particular type and another would not.
Okay, thanks. Brett is with us now, London, Canada. Hey, Brett, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, I just want to make two quick points. The first is I read the 1948 publication by Marcel, what's his last name, Grile, on the Dogon tribe.
Oh, yeah, the and French anthropologist.
Yeah, the very first one. And he, they talk about a term called Numo, is the term they use for their gods. And he mentions how they use that term and water interchangeably throughout the interview, which I think maybe gives, like, some insight into if they were, like, terraforming the planet, water would be sort of, like, a really essential thing. And I just find that interesting because of the guest George had on earlier with, like, the starfish and the sort of the condition of our ocean.
Well,
and my second point is on sort of, I feel like Zachariah Sinch has sort of, like, done, like, a disservice to the anthropology community, because he's confused, I believe, like, the physical versus the spiritual aspect of the culture. The same way, like, I think people, like, I'm not sure, like, if the alien phenomena is physical or spiritual like most people, but I do know that, like, when it comes to texts, like, the Innu English, like, the first Sumerian text, it's kind of, like, written in a Kabbalah code, similar to, like, the Christian Bible, And I don't believe these entities are real. For example, like Inki is called the Master Magician and Controller of Waters, and he seems to correspond to the pineal gland because it monitors like H2O levels in the blood, controls like melatonin, DMT, which is essential for magic because of the Chaldeans were like a dream magic. You know, they did all their stuff there. So I just feel like maybe these terms are being thrown around. Like, it seems like the Anunnaki could correspond to like the Arabian Jinn, and the Igigi seem to correspond to like a gatewalking ritual that was passed on to the Egyptians in the Book of the Dead, and is also found in Taoism. So I just wanted to contribute that because I feel like there's still like, you know, there's a spiritual aspect to these texts that's encoded, because when a culture comes in and conquers it and takes their wisdom, they don't want to pass that on. And Zacharias Sinch's sort of like big thing is that, well, the first myth must be fact. And I just don't think that's true. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
We're definitely dealing with physical entities. And the pneumo that the French anthropologists were writing about was a name that the Dogon tribe was using for their so-called gods who came out of the water, and that when they described them, the humanoids had some kind of scales. And when you go to the Anunnaki and you look at the carved stones, there are also beings that look like they have fish scales on them. Others look like maybe the Ubaid figurines that look so much like reptilian, like standing up alligators with dots all over their skin. Those are all part of the true, honest-to-God, physical Mesopotamian history on this planet that has puzzled people, and now it's beginning to make sense in the context of everything that the Colonel has been telling Anthony Sanchez. So the question about whether we're dealing with physical, extraterrestrial, biological entities, I don't think there's any question about that.
What do you think of Anthony Sanchez, Linda, in as much as he's the go-between?
Well, I think that Anthony has done something very important here. He was working with computers, servers in that digital world. He was in the Silicon Valley, ends up with a colleague who is very interested in Anthony Sanchez's straightforward, passionate interest in UFOs and ETs. And Anthony was doing a blog, like so many people have done blogs on the Internet. And one of these colleagues that he didn't know very well began asking him a lot of questions and then began sharing information, and turns out that that colleague was working on extraterrestrial technology being back engineered and applied to our military weapon system. This is like Isaac in the Dragonfly drone story. Here, he's a computer guy who has brought in to back engineer extraterrestrial technology in a Palo Alto lab to try to apply it, research application in the commercial world. And so Anthony ends up, because of this one man's great interest and then telling Anthony about extraterrestrial technologies that are being used, it leads to the lieutenant colonel, who then wants to talk with Anthony Sanchez about what he knew at Dulce, largely because the colonel, as Anthony understood it, was very upset by all of the genetic manipulation that was still going on at Dulce underground, and the fact that the government policy of denial is to keep humanity from knowing anything about our past, our relationship with extraterrestrials, their relationship with the history and genetic manipulations and evolutions on this planet. And he, like a lot of people, I have met a lot of people who are frustrated, upset, and angry because they have been exposed to this huge lie, this huge disconnect between the planet that we're living on under one so-called set of history and completely different other reality. And it really gets to people. I think we should all know the truth and go on from there.
The truth would sure be nice. Wendy in Fairfax, Oklahoma. Go ahead, Wendy.
Hello, and thank you so much for taking my call. Linda, I respect your work so much.
Thank you.
I would just like to share with you that I'm a member of the Osage Indian Nation in Fairfax, Oklahoma. I live on the reservation, and I've been taught our oral tradition from my childhood. And our tradition believes that we are, as a nation, to be Osage, you have to be half earth person and half star person. And our oral belief states that we came from of and among the stars, we came to the earth, and we intermarried with the people that were already here on the earth. And even today, our whole society is based around we have clan systems that are star people and earth people, and then we also have divisions within the tribe that relate to star parts of the division, Shiju, and then the earth people called Hunka, and then the earth is separated into two parts, water, Washaji, and then earth, Hunka. And it's so prevalent, and even in our language, we even have, like, part of our language, we have old star language. We still use these old words that are part of our old star language, but it's also developed into, like, our language we have today that's not as old as that. But my question to you is, Linda, when you visit with all kinds of people, you know, and government officials and all these people that won't disclose, you know, what they know and everything, have they ever said anything to you about who might have come to this hemisphere, North American, South American hemisphere, and intermarried with the people here to create our Native American population, especially specifically the Osage Nation?
Well, remember, if extraterrestrials are manipulating DNA in already evolving primates over millennia, that nobody really has to travel anywhere because the non-humans can simply abduct a human from any place on the planet and manipulate sperm, egg, and there is a pregnancy, and that is the genetic manipulation of evolving primates. It means that you are affecting the what's going to be born. And so you don't have to have migration if you are extraterrestrials and sophisticated technology, and you can beam things up and beam things down. I'm curious if in the Osage history, is there any definition of what star system or something that the star people behind your group came from?
She hung up, Linda, but it would be interesting if it was the Sirius star system, wouldn't it?
Well, if you're listening, and you can email me at earthfiles@earthfiles.com, I'd be very interested in what the Osage, what their perspective is on the source out in the stars.
Let's go to Frank now in Chino, California. Frank, you're on with Linda. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering, how would you know if you're part of that Anunnaki bloodline? I listened to you answer.
How would you know? How would an individual know or think that they were part of the bloodline? Linda, is there any way of finding out?
Well, I would imagine that there are all kinds of genome analyses going on this planet for a variety of reasons, and that our government probably has satisfied itself about everything that you've heard Anthony Sanchez say in this interview tonight, meaning that they've been doing research on their own, the government insiders, the MJ-12 types, they need reality checks. You don't continue to collaborate with extraterrestrials on back engineering technology that is theirs and applying it to our weapon systems and our planes and our space programs. if you aren't trying to the best of your ability to get a handle on just exactly who are we dealing with and what and why. And I would assume that there is also, if it's the grays that are collaborating with humans, because the grays have been fighting with these tall, pale ones for so long, what an odd irony that is, that there must be a huge question about trust, because we don't trust each other as humans, and we would be collaborating with grays that I believe there's two incidents, one in the early 1950s and one in 1979, where allegedly at Dulce and another at Area 51 that there was some sort of an altercation between the gray beings and humans. And that suggests that things are not peaceful there either. So what kind of uneasy alliances are there between the humans and the extraterrestrials, let alone all of the violence and war that is going on among humans on the planet right now?
Linda, almost out of time. I want to wish you good luck in your upcoming conferences, and you're going to post that on your website?
Yes, that I'm going to be in Orange County, Newport Beach, September 17th to speak at MUFON Orange County there, and I'll put up the link at earthfiles.com, and I have a lot more to unfold at Earth Files about Anthony Sanchez's interview with the Colonel.
Great, thanks. Linda Moulton Howe, she always does a great job. She'll be with us next month as well. For Nathan Staten, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lautasore, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.